Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. We're taping this a little early in the week. Tuesday, February 18th. It is the All-Star break in the NBA. Exciting All-Star festivities, obviously, with the fourth quarter being so tight. So we're going to talk to Aaron Rinning. You've heard him on the podcast before, professional bettor, heavy in the NBA. We're going to talk a lot about some macro topics, touch on the Rockets, touch on the Lakers, MVP odds, rookie of the year odds, adjusted season win totals that Caesars has put out, maybe some tanking teams, a lot to dive into with ER, so looking forward to that. Just a reminder, last week's podcast did some of that with Preston Johnson. You can go download that. A lot of that is still not outdated. And also checked in with Jimmy Vaccaro, longtime Vegas odds maker, on the 30-year anniversary of Mike Tyson being upset famously by Buster Douglas, 42-1 odds. Jimmy recapped. He was the only odds maker to ever offer odds on that fight that took place in Tokyo. Tyson was just a dominant force, so he put up the odds, so he's got a great stories there. Also, this week is the anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. Jimmy was around for booking that action, and you can go check out that pod a week ago. But coming up, Aaron Rinning. We'll get into the NBA with him, but I also want to remind you to check out the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The Astros cheating scandal has been front and center, and Baseball Tonight has you covered. If you haven't already, download and subscribe to the Baseball Tonight podcast and Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. But first, there's plenty going on at DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports. DraftKings will have millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs this week. Take your shot at big cash prizes with basketball contests every day, or take a swing at golf, hockey, and more every week. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Get closer to the sports you love when you play daily fantasy sports with DraftKings. Drafting your team is simple. Just select your players and stay under the salary cap. And don't forget, there's still football going on with the XFL action this weekend. Plus, when you join DraftKings today, you can play free for over $100,000 in prizes with your first deposit. Get in on all of this week's action. Download the DraftKings app now. Enter code Doug, that's D-O-U-G, during sign-up and get a free shot at over $100,000 in prizes with your first deposit. Don't forget, that's code Doug, and get a free shot at over $100,000 in prizes with your first deposit. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
That is the truth from Bob Lee's mouth to your ears. I think that's the phrase. But either way, we bring in Aaron Rinning. ER, how are you?
I'm doing good. Great to be with you, Doug. It's been a little bit, but NBA All-Star break, obviously. It's been a pretty strong first half. Hopefully a little bit better second half for myself, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, so you have a little break because the action does not resume until Thursday. You're headed to San Diego?
Correct. Try to get away a little bit, the extended All-Star break, if you will, but not going to happen. So just a little quick trip to San Diego is the best I can do this year.
All right, so let's regroup here, kind of take inventory. I guess just kind of like your biggest takeaways from the season's first half of action.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whether you want to look at surprises or disappointments, if you will, I would say my biggest surprise so far this year, and a lot of people will say Oklahoma City, which probably rightfully so, 33-32 straight up, the equalizer, as we like to call it, Doug, the against the spread mark, that has been the Thunder as well, 36-19. I would differ a little bit, and I'm actually surprised. My surprise team would be Memphis, 28-26 straight up, 30-23 against the number. I'm actually surprised that team is not doesn't have a better against the spread mark, because I did not expect this team whatsoever. I thought they would be probably the worst team in the Western Conference, and right now, obviously in the playoffs, looking inside, we'll see if any of these teams can catch them. Been just really impressed with what the Grizzlies have been able to do this year.
You know, that's a fair point. I was surprised with OKC. I actually thought the under was a decent play going into the season for the Thunder. Dead wrong there. But yeah, the Grizzlies, the fact that they are right now in the eighth seed is remarkable. You mentioned OKC. They do have the best record ATS this year. They've been on a ridiculous road cover percentage, like the best cover percentage on the road this year in like 30 years that we have in our database. And I think they've covered 12 straight or just something insane. So OKC is a covering machine, especially on the road. But yeah, that's a fair comment with Memphis. Now, I'm interested to see what happens the rest of the year. And we'll get into the Rookie of the Year odds with Ja Morant in a little bit. But in terms of them and maybe even OKC as well, are you expecting regression? Because previous years, we have had some teams flirt with 60% cover rate. So obviously you would think like, well, the market adjusts and there'll be more of a tax on these teams that keep covering. But not if you're kind of in that Memphis-OKC elk. If the Lakers were constantly covering, that's one thing. But I think they can still hover around that number if they continue to play well.
Yeah, the biggest thing I would say about the Thunder is, well, and I guess the beauty is, you know, we're doing this, that, you know, the trade deadline has passed. Nothing's really going to change,
right,
except perhaps injury situations with some of these teams. And I would assume if you did not like the Thunder, you would have thought that they would have traded a lot of these parts. And obviously that's not going to be the case. We know that Gallinari was almost traded to the Miami Heat, perhaps some other moves as well, but at this point, with the exception of injuries, that's not going to happen. So I don't think the Thunder are going anywhere. What I'm intrigued by is this race in the Western Conference. And again, right now, the Memphis, the 8 seed, you have Portland, San Antonio, New Orleans, maybe the key team in back of them. And Memphis, what looks like to me the toughest strength of schedule moving forward in the NBA this year. I think that is going to be a key factor. So Memphis, I think, probably is going to be in for some regression. And I believe that one of these teams probably has a good chance to catch the Grizzlies for that final playoff spot. And this is one of the things that I think we're going to touch on and get talk about. I think it could very well be New Orleans. Now, I talked about the strength of schedule, and the Grizzlies have the toughest strength of schedule the rest of the way. New Orleans has the easiest strength of schedule the rest of the way. Looking at, again, I don't want to spoil the party here, Doug, but the adjusted season over-under win, if you will, from Caesars, 38.5 for New Orleans. That is a team that has a really good chance to eclipse that mark.
Right, so you've hit the nail on the head. That's all based on current opponent win percentage of the remaining team. So Memphis,
yes,
does have the hardest. They are 28-26, and their adjusted win total at Caesars is 38. So only 10 more wins for that win total. Now, you mentioned New Orleans, which is currently 5.5 games back of Memphis, and their adjusted win total is 38.5. Is that what you said? So,
correct.
You know, 5.5, but that's because of the opponents. Now,
mm-hmm,
when you power rate the Pelicans, how do you assess them, because Zion is such a difference maker and he's only played a handful of games?
Very impressed with what he's been able to do. I mean, you know, to think that he sat out the first half of the season and then you can just come in and be such a difference maker. What did he score, 32 points in his last game, which didn't work out. But, I mean, he is, I mean, you and I watched the NBA for a long time. And a guy that can come in his rookie year, in his first couple of games, and make that kind of impact, just rare. It just doesn't happen that often. So you do have to account for what he's been able to do. Now, health is kind of a big thing with this team. We've seen it with the Pelicans, really, for a number of years. But again, if this team stays healthy, and Caesars did a great job on adjusting some of these numbers, no surprise there. But, yeah, I mean, he is, you know, he's an NBA all-star difference maker that, you know, hit upon this team, 10, 15 games ago.
So you essentially just look at the games with Zion. I mean, I think that's the only way you can do it, right?
Yeah, I have them power rated very high. Again, the Western Conference, being a Western Conference team, and where this team is, and again, you know, it just seems like New Orleans has always been a little bit banged up. The coaching can be a little bit sketchy. I'm trying to pull up my numbers right now, but certainly I have this as a, you know, at least a probably 3 or 4 points above average. I have New Orleans certainly power rated ahead of Memphis and Oklahoma City by a pretty fair amount right now.
Interesting. Well, they just lost at home to OKC the final game before the All-Star break, but Brandon Ingram did not play. But you mentioned the healthy. Like that's my thing. If I had to, I would probably lean under with the Pelicans just because of the uncertainty. And then at some point, like the youth shows, I know they have Redick, but like at some point when the pressure kind of mounts and they need to get a lot of – I just think the youth and the lack of a favorable whistle is going to show for them to stay under that. Now, that's just my opinion, but at their best, like we saw their best almost when they played the Bucks the first half of that game. They were great. They were up three, and that was their best. But when it came down to like crunch time, now again, that's facing Milwaukee, one of the best teams in the NBA, they just didn't have the chops, so to speak. Now, to your point, they have the easiest schedule remaining in the NBA, but they still, it's a lot to ask in terms of their remaining games. So I think since we're talking Grizzlies and Pelicans, I want to ask your opinion on the Rookie of the Year award, because to me, it's fascinating. So you have Zion Williamson, who was the favorite last summer after the draft. Then his injury occurs. Right before his long-awaited return last month, he was 16-1, and Ja Morant was in the neighborhood of minus 1,000. Obviously, those numbers have come down, and Zion's have, you know, they've come in opposite directions now. So you're looking at Morant about minus $6 and Zion 3-1. For me, I thought before he made his debut, there's no way he could win. There's no way. Not enough games.
Right.
Now, after seeing him, I'm like, all right, well, you never know with the voters. But still, 37 games is the max he can play. Similarly, a couple years ago, Joel Embiid only played 31 games, and he put up like 20-8. So he had really good numbers, and that was the year Malcolm Brogdon won. So it wasn't exactly a guy like Morant, and still it wasn't enough games. So I don't think 37 is enough, especially Morant has been playing so great for a team that's flirting with a playoff spot.
I think it plays out rather simple, I guess, if you will. I look at it like this. If New Orleans were to get a playoff spot, overtake Memphis, and again, the schedule kind of sets up for that to perhaps happen, and Zion stays relatively healthy, where he pretty much plays just about every single game, and I'm not sure what their back-to-back situation is. But if they overtake Memphis, I think it's 50-50, Doug.
Really?
I really do.
So you think 37 games is enough?
I just think there's going to be such an overwhelming again, you know, you have to understand that New Orleans would have to overtake Memphis for that 8 seed. A lot of it just would play out like Zion would get so much attention, and he is such a difference maker for this team I think it would be 50-50.
So you don't see value at minus $6?
Definitely not.
Okay. All right. I've said this on last week's pod. I was fascinated by Steve Kerr winning Coach of the Year, even though he missed about half the season. I know they won 73 games that year, but still, he wasn't on the sideline calling plays or directing the team for like half the year. So the fact that the media demonstrated they can do that made me reluctant to fire on Morant, but I still think 37 games tops is just not enough. But there's a reason it's $6. I just can't lay it because of that apprehension. What are some of the other sort of takeaways from I was surprised the Lakers have performed so well. You know, we're so accustomed to LeBron kind of pacing himself in the regular season and waiting for the playoffs, but the fact that they are the number one seed in the West, 41-12, I've been pretty surprised that that kind of manifested itself. It also speaks to how bad the roster was constructed last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see a situation where, and I think we've kind of seen it maybe since the new year, where the Lakers do take the foot off the gas, if you will. Remember when the season started, October, November, and the Lakers definitely wanted to play with this defensive mentality. That to me was kind of the difference. Anthony Davis wanted to be Defensive Player of the Year. They talked about LeBron James playing defense, which maybe he hadn't the last couple of years. So you saw that, and I think we've seen that, you know, defensive efficiency number kind of come up for the Lakers. So, you know, it's a team that is sitting there, obviously with a phenomenal record, the best record in the Western Conference. And, LeBron has said it. It's probably not the biggest deal in the world if this team gets the number one seed, the number two seed, the number three seed in the West. So it is a bunch of veterans for the most part on this team. So I just I would look to probably maybe bet against the Lakers, certainly as you get these big home favorites, double-digit favorites in the second half of the season.
Can't disagree there. It's going to be just compelling to see, and we've talked about this a lot. This is just a component of, that's inherent with NBA betting, in that the load management and the unpredictability of it is. And someone like yourself who tries to kind of beat the number the night before, the morning of, how do you approach that when you have so many late scratches?
Well, it's not easy. I mean, it's funny because I generally don't, you know, I don't like the way the NBA has gone, where you have all these guys questionable. You don't know if they're going to play. But I've had a good year, and with the way the market has kind of moved, it's actually kind of worked out well for me, with a lot of kind of late numbers or the late official number kind of coming up. So we'll see what happens in the second half. Obviously, the Clippers are kind of the lead team with sitting some of these guys out, and I wouldn't be surprised to see if the Lakers, it happens with them. Anthony Davis, kind of a walking injury, if you will. They don't want to kind of risk LeBron James. Denver has had a lot of guys that have been banged up. Houston, we've seen a team like that kind of go all out, if you will, in the regular season before. It hasn't really worked out for them in the playoffs. Eastern Conference, you can kind of say the same thing with a number of these players and teams as well. So I think you're going to see a lot of it, especially if, you know, you're talking about maybe the top four teams in each conference, where, you know, Philadelphia right now with the fifth seed, Houston with the fifth seed. You know, I still think it matters to try to get into those top four. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see some, what would you like to say, arrest management the rest of the way here.
What do you make of the Rockets? I mean, they obviously just got Jeff Green and Damari Carroll, so they're going all in on this small ball thing. And I talked about it with Preston Johnson last week, and for those who didn't catch that podcast, basically there was this stat that our research team came up with that just kind of made it all make sense, is that Russell Westbrook over a 10-game stretch had the most points in the paint over the last, I want to say, 15, 20 years of any player besides Shaq. So Shaq had a bunch of like seven stretches that had more points, but basically what this did is just maximized Westbrook and his lane paths. And you know what? It was just kind of like they had to choose one or the other with the Capella thing and all that. So now they're just going pure small ball, switching everything, and then relying on the three-pointer.
No, it's amazing. It's an amazing stat that you talk about. And again, it does work out in certainly some ways that how they envisioned that this would happen. But it probably doesn't work out in some other ways. And, you know, it's kind of ironic because you look at some of the teams in front of them. Obviously, the Lakers, probably, I don't know if you throw Denver in there, but certainly Utah, a team with a lot of size, and how that would match up in a playoff series and the adjustments that some of these teams could make. That is going to be a fascinating story. I don't think we really have to worry about in the regular season. For the most part, it's fine. But I think when you get matched up into the playoffs, it comes, you know, perhaps a little bit more of a half-court game. We'll see how it works out. Certainly, I don't know. I don't know if I have the answer.
It is very interesting, but I definitely think they have more than just like a puncher's chance. They were right there with the Warriors in years past. Chris Paul's injury adding to it. This could really be compelling. And there might be a big injury for the other contenders, too. I mean, could be LeBron. Could be Davis. You never know.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I'll say this about both the Eastern and the Western Conference. I still feel that things are very wide open. And, you know, the Bucks have arguably the best player, the best team in the regular season, but we saw them basically get out-coached, outmatched in the Eastern Conference last year by Toronto. Now, Toronto doesn't have the best player with Kawhi this year, but I think Toronto, Boston, Miami, Philadelphia, I think those are all somewhat live teams to come out of the Eastern Conference, and I can say the same thing about the Western Conference. And the big thing, you know, everybody says the Lakers and the Clippers, and certainly those are the two favorite teams, but it's just not easy that these teams have never taken a punch together in a playoff series. You know, talking about Leonard and George together, Davis and LeBron. You know, it'd be a long shot for Denver or Utah, maybe even Houston, to come out of there, but I just don't remember where I could say there was a handful of teams in either conference that if things kind of broke their way, that they could come out of that. And remember last year, before the playoffs started, the Toronto Raptors were 12-1 to win the finals.
That's interesting. That you thought, see, I think the Bucks are there. I think the Bucks are right there, but I'm not giving the other teams that much of a chance against the Bucks. But I mean, for example, how would you rank the East in terms of likelihood to win the conference in the playoffs?
Right. If you go by recent NBA history, I mean, you know, going back a decade, you need to either have, I mean, it really comes down to the players, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have the best player, and certainly Giannis is that in the Eastern Conference. So it is hard to overcome that, and it's hard to kind of get out of that stereotype, if you will, because it generally is, you know, the best player on these teams. And for Giannis, you know, and he doesn't, you know, whether it's kind of the same supporting cast as he had last year, but you have to remember what went down. I mean, they got out-coached. The Giannis rules, if you will, let him, you know, try to take away the inside, let him do whatever on the outside, and I think he has improved his game. But I guess I'm one, Doug, that until I see it happen, you know, for this team to get through to the finals, I have to think that it might not happen. So the Bucks, certainly the favorite and the deserving favorite to get there. But, you know, and the thing I will say about Toronto, Boston, Miami, those three teams are all very well coached. They can do some different things, if you will. Philadelphia still has a lot of talent, has a lot of size to defend the rim. So, like I say, I think all these teams have a puncher's chance.
Yeah, I'm just not sold on Toronto. And I realize it's a different team, but remember, they were a punchline for so many years until they got Kawhi.
They were.
I know it's Nick Nurse, and I know Siakam, and I know some of the depth is there that's different, but I just can't. I don't see them. Like, they would be like, they would probably be fifth on my depth chart behind the Bucks, and then Celtics, Heat, Sixers in no particular order. I just trust the star power.
Right.
Opponent.
Very understandable.
But they do have that pedigree, and they obviously were not just Kawhi Leonard last year. Other players made big plays, but, you know, the Warriors are pretty banged up, and they made it through the East, but all things considered, I just have to rank them fifth. We mentioned Giannis. To me, in my eyes at this juncture, barring injury, it's a two-horse MVP race. But it's not the two horses you think. It's definitely Giannis, and he's the betting favorite for good reason. I see him at minus 800. But I think the only other candidate that can win it is LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Luka's played enough. I don't think Harden and his style of play, even if he starts going for 40, 45 a game for like a 10, I just don't think that's enough to offset what Giannis has done. His portfolio to this point, past the halfway mark, is just so impressive with what he's averaging, his PER, then compared to like his minutes played, the number one overall seed. It's just he's going to win it unless I think there is a case where LeBron leads them to the one seed out west, leads the league in assists, and just sort of kind of carries the franchise in the wake of Kobe's passing that I think could sort of stir the pot with the voter fatigue of the reigning MVP, maybe make LeBron a live dog, so to speak, at 8-1.
I think your sentiments are right on. I agree. LeBron's the only other guy that could get in there. I think you have to give him some props to perhaps get that. We talk about remaining strength of schedule. The Bucks have a little bit, quite a bit tougher than the Lakers, if you will. They do play one common game against each other. I would say the thing is, it's really kind of injury. You certainly won't expect either guy to get injury, but I think you will have some rest management with both of these guys. So, again, I think you really hit the nail on the head in talking about it.
Speaking of the Bucks, the over-under adjusted win total by Caesars is 69.5. Now, the juice has come in hard on the under. You mentioned the remaining schedule. So, will they get 70? I wonder, because the load management thing, obviously you think like, well, maybe Coach Bud's learned his lesson last year, flaming out in the playoffs, but like Giannis is averaging like 32 minutes. So it's not something that they really need, but you would think they're going to come back to earth. But they've been, even at this record and everything, they've been so underappreciated this year. Maybe they're just going to keep chugging along with wins, and it's possible.
It's kind of one of those things, you're right, a lot of under money for the under 69.5. I think there's this quest to win 70 games, and we saw that obviously last out against Indiana. That's easier said than done. So it really kind of boils down to if they have this 70 mark that they could possibly attain, you'll see them maybe go a little bit all out, if you will. If that's not going to happen, they're 6.5 games in front of Toronto right now, 8 in front of Boston, the number one seed, and really home court. What are they, a number of games in front of the Lakers as well. So, I think you probably see a little bit of sharp money here under 69.5, and you can understand why.
Yeah, they're 4.5 games up on the Lakers, 6.5 on Toronto for the one seed out east. They would have to go 24-4 the rest of the way to reach 70 wins. So, obviously unlikely, and the under's like, it's over minus $2 in terms of the juice there. So, look, I'd love to see it, but it's certainly worth talking about. I guess we can go. Let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. Last year was the first year of the adjusted lottery rules, and one thing that I think is the takeaway, and Windhorse was on the show a year ago, and sort of his observation was the teams that are sort of in the middle of the lottery are the ones that started tanking the most instead of the teams at the top, because the adjusted odds is no longer so significant. So sort of that, you know, if we're talking lottery seeds, right, like 5, 6, 7. So who are you sniffing out to maybe really get to an egregious mark? I think Detroit's already there. They've started that transition. And, I mean, we can get into the philosophy of fading the tanking teams or actually betting on them. But I wonder if we're going to start seeing Devin Booker on the shelf for a little bit and the Wizards even mix things up, because I think the Pistons are there now.
It feels a little bit different this year. For whatever reason, and you mentioned the adjusted tank rules, you know, you're not exactly sure how it's going to play out, but take a team like Minnesota, second worst team in the Western Conference by margin, 16-37. They've been the worst against the spread team, but, you know, they make this trade for Russell, and we know Towns is going to miss some time to start the second half. But it's a team that it sounded like they want to start building towards next year. I think Sacramento, Phoenix to a degree. I mean, Phoenix has been tanking every single year. They actually put some guys around Booker. And, you know, with Ayton coming back, he missed a number of games. It seems like that Phoenix wants to continue to try to win games. I mean, they're just one game, and back in New Orleans, we're talking about New Orleans being a potential playoff team. And obviously Portland, San Antonio, New Orleans. I mean, if San Antonio's out of it, and right now 5 games in back of Memphis, there's a team that, you know, probably going to tank the rest of the year. The Eastern Conference, you know, I would put all those teams pretty much on the list to be perhaps tanking teams. New York, Detroit, Charlotte, Cleveland. I think Atlanta is a team that might not be of that ilk. Again, this is a team that missed John Collins for a lot of the season. It's a team that's ready to probably battle for the playoffs next year. So I'm not sure about that team. But, yeah, the rest of that conference is pretty bad. But, you know, you have a team like Washington's, who's been so pathetic defensively. Three games in back of Orlando for that final playoff seed.
It's remarkable. It's remarkable. Orlando had lost like 12 of 14 like at some point in recently, and they were in the 8th seed. where do you stand on sort of the philosophy that there's actually value on the tanking team? So once those tanking teams establish themselves, because remember, the tanking teams are just trying to lose. They're not trying to not cover.
Right.
So sometimes there's a tax just because of the perception people associate losing and the higher point spread. I just don't know, especially with the higher scoring now and the three-pointer, I just think it's tough to get in front of some of these ugly dogs. But that's what the beauty of the point spread is, the great equalizer, as you alluded to earlier. So I do understand the concept of value on the dog.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I say, I think this year feels a little bit different to me. Like I say, maybe those Western Conference teams. And what's Golden State going to do? Is Steph Curry going to play? How many games?
I don't think
so.
Is he?
I don't know. I mean, they've talked like these guys want to come back and try to contribute, if you will, maybe build something for next year. But yeah, does it make any sense in the world whatsoever for these guys to come back? Obviously, clearly the worst team in the Western Conference. So, you know, how high, and if he doesn't come back, how high do you make the number on the Warriors? It's interesting because they have been competitive at times, and then other times, they've been beaten by 30 or 40 with no problem, but they are such a different level, lower level, than the rest of those teams in the Western Conference.
ER, anything else to add? I think I'm pretty fascinated by our discussion. Of course, our listeners are, but anything else?
There's another team that I thought was kind of interesting from a season over-under win. Again, Caesars did a really good job. The Philadelphia 76ers, 53 on the adjusted season over-under win, and this is a team that I kind of had earmarked to go over. Because right now, Philadelphia in that fifth seed in the Eastern Conference. It seems like they want to make the amends and build towards a solid second half. Remember, 2 years ago, Philadelphia was incredible down the stretch. Right now for Philadelphia, 34-21, as I mentioned, number in the 50s. But
so they'd have to go 20-6, is that right?
Schedule strength for Philadelphia, the second easiest schedule the rest of the way. They do have a couple games against the Bucks. The Lakers, but they have a lot of bad teams.
What about their road record? I mean, this is a team that's 9-19 away from Philly.
Exactly. But again, 53 on that. I thought
it's 53 or 53.5?
I'm sorry. It's 53.
Okay, so they need to go 20-7, if my math is correct.
I think they're going to do that.
Okay, interesting. 20-7, 19-8 to push.
You talk about their bad road record. So, Doug, there's got to be some emphasis that this team doesn't want to be a road disadvantage in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would think because they are currently the, fifth seed, so they're, they don't have home court at all.
Right.
That's a good point. So you're saying they go, I can see that, but something wrong with this team. I just don't think they get along. I just don't think they, because last year when they had that run, they had Jimmy Butler. And all their big hoops went through Butler, at least to initiate the offense.
Yeah, you know, again, this is a very top-heavy team. I think they'll be a little bit more dangerous in the playoffs. Embiid, I don't know whether he's been healthy. Josh Richardson was obviously banged up quite a bit. So I guess you could say somewhat believe in this team, and I think there's going to be a sense of urgency. So, and the schedule really plays out in their favor. So I think they get up into that third and fourth seed. If they do that, they've got a great chance to get to 53, 54, 55.
All right. Good stuff. And, yes, it's really cool to do adjusted win totals. I wish more shops did it, but maybe it'll become a new thing moving forward as gambling continues to grow. ER, awesome catching up. Enjoy San Diego.
All right. Thank you. Good luck here the second half of the season.
You too. And real quick, I want to tell you that DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at over $100,000. Download the DraftKings app and enter code Doug at signup. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. And Christina, before we wrap things up, time for a little XFL talk. And you have remained perfect through 2 weeks of the XFL.
Yep, I'm now 5-0.
5-0. What did you have last weekend?
So last weekend, I bet Defenders -7.5 and Dragons +3.
I wish I remember who I gave out last weekend. So the Defenders crushed LA, was it?
They crushed the Guardians 27-0.
Okay. Yeah. The LA team's pretty bad.
That was just a blowout. LA also lost. I believe they're the Wildcats. They lost to the Renegades 25-18.
Right. So Dallas on the road got the cover. Mm-hmm. So I liked St. Louis, was I saying? Who did I say last weekend? I think I liked Seattle's a home dog or something.
I believe so.
Yeah, I forgot what I said. So good. So that's an amazing start.
Yeah, I'm off to a solid start.
And you're in the swing of things here?
I am. I'm thinking. So I think I'm going to mix it up, and I don't necessarily think I'm going to pick a specific team. I think I'm going to go for the under in this weekend's Defenders game.
Okay. So what's your handicap there, other than the Wildcats' offense is terrible?
So I'm thinking Defenders are going to go undefeated. They're trying to, at least, because now they're 2-0.
They got Cardell Jones.
They do.
Pretty potent offense. L.A. has already fired the defensive coordinator, Pepper Johnson, after week one. Got shut out last week.
It's a mess over there.
It is a mess.
I'm thinking the Wildcats, over their last two games, haven't gotten over 18 points. The Defenders are somewhere between 27 and 31 points. They shut down the Guardians 27-0. So I don't think, if the Wildcats can't really get over 18 points, I don't really think they're going to put up much against the Defenders. So I don't think it's going to go over 45 points.
Well, the under has hit in 6 of the 8 games so far. A lot of the criticism, or I should say any criticism towards the XFL, has been mostly revolving around quarterback play. Now, some guys have been great. Some have been decent. I think Cardale Jones has been solid. Roughnecks quarterback's probably the MVP so far. And I thought Landry Jones played okay in his one game. Obviously, he was out with an injury in week one. So he played last week, was fine. Now, the Vipers stink.
They do.
Wildcats stink.
They definitely do.
Seattle's, eh.
Seattle's, eh. I took them because I figured.
Dallas is in it, too, as well.
Yeah.
So I think if you would look, I would look to the under in all games. I don't care what the number is.
Okay.
In all games not involving Houston. I think Houston's pretty solid offensively.
Okay. And I have one other question in terms of, for someone like me.
And by the way, their quarterback's Philip Walker, so I should say that.
I'm looking at all of the games. How do I, or I would say, how do you separate yourself from being a fan of a team? I like the Defenders, so I'm gravitating towards them. But how do I look at all of the other games, all of the other spreads, and how do I separate myself from being a fan and wanting to bet on the team that I like versus what's smart?
So there's two schools of thought in this, and it goes for all sports, not just the XFL, obviously. It's probably more applicable because you know these teams so well over the years. And one is you're too emotional. Don't bet any game involving your team because you're too influenced by emotion. The other side would be, well, clearly you know this team well. You know the ins and outs. You probably listen to sports radio. Whatever it may be, you are more immersed in the coverage of that said team than you would be any other team, so you're more knowledgeable. And as long as you're willing to bet against them as often as you are betting on them, I think if you're somebody who knows a team really well but only bets on them, then that's silly. So I think if you are more knowledgeable, I prefer that sort of that section, that stance. I am more confident sometimes in bets on my favorite teams or against my favorite teams than I am elsewhere. But that's over the years. It's sort of an acquired taste. Some people don't want to disrupt their viewing of their favorite team, but I definitely don't think there's a blanket rule there at all.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about because I didn't understand how to take out the emotion of it because obviously you can't bet your team always because they're going to lose at some point.
Correct. I mean, the point spread is, you know, like you say, you can bet the other team when your favorite team's laying points and win both, right? Your favorite team can win the game but not cover. And if you faded them, then you're doing well.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that there's a lot of ways to go about it. There's money line parlays, teasers, all that stuff. But I definitely... You definitely don't want to exclude anything on your options, I always think. I mean, there's people who only bet favorites, people who only bet underdogs. I just think that's kind of limiting. And so I would just kind of be open to everything, including games involving your favorite teams.
Okay, and we don't have to get into it now, but you just mentioned teasing, and that's definitely something we should talk about because I don't really understand it.
Well, then that's a tease for the next podcast. Just kidding.
Awesome.
We can get into it now. So basically, it's like a parlay, but it pays differently because you get to adjust the point spread 6, 6.5, 7. In your favor.
Interesting.
So you
okay.
have to have multiple legs. That's the parallel to the parlay, but the payouts are different, obviously. So it's just another way to sort of get involved with multiple games, and you feel like you have an advantage when you get to adjust the point spread 6 points or 6.5, 7 in your favor, but you obviously have to sacrifice odds in order to do it. So there's some math edges, too, that people think about, particularly in football with key numbers like the NFL. And when there's a low total, so the value of moving aside 6 points is much more advantageous in a game with an over-under of like 41, 42 than it is a game that has like an over-under of 55. It's really just straight fractions, 6 over 55 compared to 6 over 42, right? Like just the total amount of points, if it's a lower scoring game, the value of moving aside 6 points matters more.
Gotcha.
So, and then around those key numbers of 7, 4, 3, 6, things like that. Now, XFL is different. We're not really sure what the key numbers are, although we did have the games decided by 8, 7-4 last weekend, and then a blowout 27-0. The week before was 12-10, 20-6. So you're still got some football numbers out there. It's just the actual numbers aren't common, like 25-18, but at least the margin's 7, which is what we're talking about with point spread. So there's definitely different philosophies. Very few people tease college games because that goes back to the over-under. The higher the total, kind of the less significant moving a side is by 6 points.
Gotcha. Okay, this makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, think it through and hope our listeners are with us on that. So that's going to do it for this podcast. Thanks to Aaron Renning for his time. I know he's on a little break here with the NBA All-Star break, and he's getting away, got a flight to San Diego coming up. But it was good catching up with ER. And so that was a short pod, but next week we'll be back, have more college hoops, and the NBA second half of the season will be well underway. Don't forget, this week is the 40-year anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. Jimmy Vaccaro last week was talking about the 30-year anniversary of Buster Douglas upsetting Mike Tyson. You can go check out that pod. He also touched on the Miracle on Ice as well. They were only a week apart in terms of the anniversaries. But thanks, everyone. We'll catch you back here next time.